Welcome to the scene. I'm your host, Andrea Kruska, and today I am joined by sculptor Patrick Dudney. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you do, what your form of art and craft is?
I sculpt stone. I've worked in alabaster, marble, limestone, sandstone, soapstone, several different mediums of stone. I usually get my inspirations just from my life and what I have experienced throughout my life.
Did you train to do this? How did you get started?
Actually, I had no training whatsoever. I lived in the Southwest for a while, and there were a lot of people in the arts that lived in the community I lived in. It was in southeastern Arizona. There was a quarry that was abandoned around the turn of the century. Some of the marble that they came out of that quarry are in some of the monuments in Washington, D.C. It's a the stone itself is a real small crystal, which means you can put a glass finish on it, and easy to carve. It's the closest thing to Carrara I am aware of here in America, and it's just a pleasure to carve into.
That sounds really interesting. You don't meet a whole lot of stone carvers. So anytime I meet someone who has that skill, it's always very interesting to me, because for you, it sounds like it was just where you were, you kind of fell into it. And then you taught yourself how to do this?
Yes. Some of the friends I had, they were into sculpting. And I don't know if they were what inspired me to give it a try, but I thought, I can change the shape of this stone, and it will be the only one on earth like it. And whatever becomes of this stone, it's a part of me and something that I've made.
That's such an interesting way to look at it, because it's the same with all art forms. Is every single one of them is different, but for yours, it's such a physical thing. It's not just looking at something. It's actually you're physically changing how something looks. I really like that. What is kind of your favorite thing to do? Do you like doing like big sculptures or more functional pieces?
I think most of my what I enjoy doing is telling a story with each piece. Maybe it's ego, maybe it's just the fact that I want to be remembered sometime in the past, from the past, as a person who made his mark on the world. And I'm doing it just a chip at a time.
Is that going to end up on your tombstone one day?
Who knows? But I was involved in a war, and it brought a lot of sadness, a lot of memories, and those experiences, they followed me, and I found a way of taking those and making something positive from them, and it just comes out of the stone. When I start, I have no idea what's coming out of that stone. I just start working with a hammer and a chisel until I see something. And then all I'm doing after that is defining what was in the stone.
I really like that. We'll be right back on the scene with more with Patrick Dunne.
That rare 45 from the 1960s?
The one you wore out on your record player.
Search for the rare at Harper's.
That classic story of intrigue and mystery.
The book you can't put down.
Get a scare.
Or romance in the air.
At Harper's.
The hub for anything and everything creative.
Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles.
If it's rare.
If it's groovy.
If it's one of a kind.
You just might find it at Harper's.
Just down from the depot in Cookeville's historic West Side.
The kind of place that's much less store and much more about the search.
Stroll, look, sit a spell.
Hang out, soak in the unique and the rare.
But be warned.
You just may be late getting back to work.
It's new every time you walk through the doors.
Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles. 41 West Broad Street, Cookeville.
A one-of-a-kind book, collectible records, and unique treasures.
The community's hub for all things creative.
Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles.
Harper's Rare Books and Collectibles.
Cookeville's historic West Side.
Welcome back to the scene. I'm here talking to stone sculptor Patrick Dunne. Patrick, you said something I really like, that you'd like to see how the stone just kind of develops into what it's supposed to be. Is that something that you find to be an essential part of your process? Or do you kind of sometimes go in knowing in your head what you want something to turn into?
On most occasions, I just take the stone and start shaping it. And as I shape, I let my mind just do what it wants to do and what my hands, what it tells my hands to do. So it starts out as just chipping on a stone, changing the shape of it. The next thing you know, you will see something. And after you see what you're wanting to produce, the next step is just defining it. And it can be defined to something vague, or it can be something very detailed. Some of the work that I've done, most of it tells a story of whether it was an incident that happened or overseas, or it could have been a part of my life, something I've seen, something that touched me. I guess I'm an emotional sculptor. It's not planned. I let it happen, and what comes out, I know I'm finished when I'm pleased with it.
I think that's actually really beautiful, because for so many people, art is so deeply connected to emotion and like that mind, body, spirit connection. Most people who are in art, they're not thinking about technique all the time. They're just letting it flow. And it sounds like you're doing a lot of that. And it sounds like your work is very personal. Like you said, you are inspired by your past experiences. When people are looking at what you're doing, and if people are connecting to it, what are you hoping? Are you hoping they're feeling your experience or relating it to their own?
I think every person who views any project that I've worked on, they will interpret the way they see it. And it can be something very emotional or something so vague that they don't even catch the significance of it. What they see is what they interpret it to be. I've got some pieces that I are not finished, but until I feel that inspiration to get back in and just beat on it again with a rock, I mean with a hammer and chisel, that's where I'm at. It stays there until I feel that it's time to do something else with it. And I have 3 or 4 pieces going right now, and I'm content with each piece. I know if my time on this earth holds out, they will be finished. But if not, they will be, I guess, like Michelangelo's captives. They were never meant to come out. So I accept that as well.
Question, because I've never really done a lot of, well, I've done no stonework, and I don't know a lot of people who do. How do you like do some kind of like glaze or finish on them when they're done?
No.
Eventually?
The finish I put on them, after I get things defined, and then I use rasp files. And from there, I usually go to different grits of sandpaper. After the sandpaper, you use an aluminum oxide. It's a powder. You make a paste out of it, and you hand rub it. And after the aluminum oxide, you go with a tin oxide. And tin oxide, you can rub. I'm doing my hand here in front of you. But you just rub until you can make a piece of marble look like a piece of glass.
Very cool. We'll be right back on the scene with more with Patrick Dudney. You're back on the scene, and I am here talking to sculptor Patrick Dudney. Patrick, so you have all these pieces that you work on and you come back to when you want to. What do you do with them when you're done?
Most of the things that I have completed have been given to friends and family. There are a few pieces that I keep in my home. One is called Body Parts, and then there's the Play Trap Boys. The Play Trap Boys is a piece that started as just a block of marble, Arizona marble, that I carried out of the quarry on my backpack. This was years ago during the 80s. I was a stronger man and wanted this particular piece that I picked up. And there was a reunion in Nashville of the fellows that I served with, and there were 19 of them put their mark on this piece of stone, and I carved around all of the signatures, or it wasn't signatures. Some of them put just initials, some put the word peace, some put the name of somebody that they miss, who's no longer with us. And one day I picked it up and I just started carving on it. I left everybody's mark where they were, and just started making squares with a chisel. As I started making just squares with a chisel, it started coming out of the stone. And this particular piece, because it has been, it was so many people was involved with this one piece. Upon completion, it went to one of the fellows' homes. After that period, 1 year period of time, he passed it on to another one of the guys who had their mark on it. After 20-odd years, it finally made it back to my home. And it sits in my foyer, and I enjoy just knowing that piece is there for me and my friends and family to enjoy. A very dear friend called and asked if I would put it in my will that it comes to him if he's still living after I pass. And I told him I would, and he was telling me about after something happened to him, whether he got tired of looking at it or whatever, it would be going, making contact with a museum in Chicago for veterans art. And hopefully one day it'll be on display there. And that has to be my favorite piece. It's very vague. It's almost like looking at a dream. There's a figure leaning into the side of a head. And I think it was what war did to us. We were young, and what we experienced was horrific. And there's a hollow spot where the heart sat, signifying this is where it really hurt. And that was the heart, and up here, the head, there's a part of it not complete. And then the figure leaning into it, that's us. And we're just trying to keep it together. And when we get together, we talk about incidents, and it sort of puts things back in perspective.
Absolutely. What a excellent testament to what you went through together, but what you've also made from your experiences mm-hmm. that you can all share and look at and respect.
It was a pleasure being here, and thank you for giving me the time to share the morning with you.